Hello again, everybody. Welcome. It's Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 108. And this episode will be part two in a series of discussions about how to become a little bit better of a trainer than you are right now, if that's important. I can't imagine how that would not be important, because the best trainers in the world are always trying to get just a little bit better than they are, just like with dogs. But what I want to talk about today is your perspective when you begin whatever training it is you do with your dog. You may train, you know, in a large group of people. You may train in just you and someone else. You may train all by yourself. But whenever you're going to have a training session, if somebody were to stop you right before you were heading in to get going on it and said, "So what's on your mind? What's happening?" Would you have an answer? Would you be able to say what it is you were shooting for, what it is you were, you know, what your objective of that day was? If you don't have one, then as you go into whatever you're doing, you're kind of winging it and you're kind of flying. And I know that sometimes that can work. And some days you go in winging it and, you know, just has a day that you're just really happy with. And other times you're winging it and it kind of spirals downhill, not so good. And I don't know if you've ever associated the outcomes of these training sessions with what the input to these training sessions, but it's kind of a big deal. So I'd like to get people to think about that first. So let's just talk about that just a little bit. So next time you go out, or just think about the last one you did. So what was in your mind? You know, a lot of times it's if you're training in a group, it's like, "Oh, I hope Fred isn't going to be there, because, you know, every time Fred's there, he's going to tell me what I did wrong here, or else you hope somebody else is there because your dog does so much better than they do." So a lot of times that's what we have going in. Other times when you go in, again, if you're with a group, it's like, "Oh, I hope I don't look like the bad one. I hope I'm not the one whose dog looks the worst or has the worst time." So you're carrying that in with you. Or on the opposite, "Good, I'm going to show these guys what a really good dog does. I can hardly wait. I hope we set up something really hard. I'll shine even better over that stuff." Or a lot of times, you know, particularly if you train alone, you kind of go out going, "Well, I got to train alone, so let's see, what do I want to do today? And you kind of go in there with some vague things. So a mindset going into training like that can very often set the tone for the whole rest of the training session. So I just want to say that. Believe it or not, you know, I found that with myself. Depending on how I am going in, usually it comes out exactly the way that I brought myself into the situation. So that's a very powerful awareness to have. So when you're in a training session and you're going in, and let's use an example. You're just going to be doing, we've got retriever people listening to this. We're going to be doing sets of marks, right? So you're training with somebody else and maybe they're setting it up, or you guys discuss it and you set something up, and then you get your dog out. Okay, right at that moment, you get your dog out. Whoever's out in the field is out in the field. And you get your dog out, and right, again, right there, snapshot. What is on your mind? Now, some people it's going to be, "Well, nothing." It's nothing. "I'm just going to the line. I'm not really thinking anything." Or some people, you know, have all the things I said before. All these different kind of deals. If your ego is a part of it, if Fred is there and you don't want to look like you made a mistake because Fred's going to come over there and tell you a bunch of stuff, right? That's an ego thing. I realize it's annoying to have the Freds come over and tell you what they think, but that's an ego thing. Or if you hope, you know, let's be honest, what most people are doing is hoping that they look the best. Most of us going into training sessions with other people want to be the winner of the training session, because that feels really good. It implies that your dog is better, that your training is better, that you handle better. It's just, It just is a win-win for you. You just look better. And so that becomes the objective. So when you are in this training session and you're watching both, you're running your own dog and you're watching other people, it's, we're like judging Miss America here. All right, he did better on the marks, but his blind was terrible. My blind was really good. So I think probably overall mine was a little bit better. And we got this whole thing going all the time. Or I can break it into 100 ways. Oh, look at on the line. He's moving or she's moving around a lot. Look how much time she's taking. That's way too. Oh, look. And so you know what everyone else is doing wrong. And that's so much of people's training sessions. So that you're either oblivious and you just walk up. And I've watched many people, including in some of my training sessions that go on right here, people going up to run a set of marks. And they walk up, sit down. Look at their dog sitting, look out at the gun and just start signaling, right? It's like, okay, signal, let's go. Run. So their mind, I know what their mind is on. It's on, okay, we're going to run a mark. So good, dog's here. I'll signal him, see where the bird goes, and then I'll send him. So I would call that your basic clueless kind of a thing where people just mind, there's nothing on the mind at all. I'm going to just use a set of marks here because it's a good example. It applies to everything. But when you're at a training session, if you're worried about externals, if you are concerned about what the other people are doing, what the other people are seeing, what the other people are going to think about you, if you're thinking things about them, none of that is to your advantage. None of that. Do you know what your dog gets when they're next to you and you've got that? Nothing. They get nothing. You are completely disconnected from them because you're concerned about all of these external things. And so the dog if somebody were running you and they were thinking about all this other stuff, you would know it. And so you'd be kind of in your old world going, oh, is that a frog? Is it looking around? I don't know exactly what they're doing, but they're not in a teamwork thing with you. So believe it or not, in my experience and stuff is when you got a lot of externals going on about either other people watching or you have nothing going on, just walk up, sit down, signal, just go. Okay, you're missing that connection between you and the dog, and then you're missing the conversation. And I use that term not literally, like someone speaking, the conversation with your dog. So if you are actually wanting to be training your dog while you're doing this, then the best thing is one for you to see what they're telling you, right? This is just like your student in a math class. If they're slumped over on the table sleeping while you're giving your math lecture, then you should notice that and probably address that situation, right? Everybody would know that. If you're giving the math lecture and they're on their phone playing Candy Land or whatever that thing is, then you know there's no teaching going on and nothing good is going to come of this. So when you're walking up to the line to run a set of marks or whatever you're doing, and you're not aware of the mindset of your student and what's happening, then there's not going to necessarily be a lot of teaching going on. And if you're just going through the motions, yeah, we're running marks. Yeah, just get it out. Let's walk up there. Okay, then you are now strengthening and developing that lack of connection between the two of you. And if this is important, the work that you're doing with these dogs, the lack of connection is something you are never going to wish you had. It will never do any good for you. But if you're running a tough set of marks, or you know, maybe your dog didn't see one of them. I mean, you're in an event and things are happening and you paid a big old hefty entry fee, right? We need this to be successful. And the more connected and communication that goes on between the two of you, so that if something goes wrong, the bird fell funny or the dog looked the other way and didn't see it, so you got to do some tricky handler stuff, right? Then the connection between the two of you gives you a chance to get through some of those situations. Or if it's just a hard thing and you really want them to focus on that long retired gun, then here is where you communicate that. Well, I really watched this one. This is going to be a tough one. But if you're not paying any attention and you kind of just saunter on up, sit down, dog sat gate, give a signal and don't have a clue what's happening, your dog may be so good that things go well. But every dog at some point is not going to just do it despite your lack of attention. So when you go up to run the set of marks, before you go, it would be really nice if you're going, all right, I'm going to run the set of marks. Looks like that one in the middle is hard. Maybe I've got a head swinging problem, or maybe the dog's just kind of nervous, so I'm going to do singles. So I want them to at least mark each single really well. I want them to do all the stuff that I need, sit calmly, watch it, stay with it, then go, not go until scent. And then when they do, make a diligent effort to get as directly to that bird as possible. I didn't say that it'd be perfect. Make a real diligent effort to get to it. Hopefully when they get to the area of the fall, you want them to hunt it up. And then pick it up and make another diligent effort to get directly back to you. Come on into heel position, sit there and wait for you to take the bird. People think that after your dog can do marks, that's autopilot, and it's really not. I mean, dogs are like us too, you know, they're thinking other stuff, maybe something got their attention, maybe they saw a little something splashed in the water over by it, just a lot of things. So what you want is for your dog to run these three marks as singles and not move their head and not wiggle and just remain focused and do a real straightforward job. And if you can get that out of this dog, success. That is success. So maybe everyone else in your training group is running a triple and every gun is retired, you know, or hard to see. And so they're doing that. Never mind, they're wriggling on the line and they had a big hunt over here. And one guy had a handle on the hard middle bird. And, you know, but they all ran triples. You're the one that had the successful day because you wanted to get this thing, this particular thing out of this set of marks. And so you focused entirely on that and made sure that the small details were all taken care of. You know when your dog is focused. You know when they tell you they've got it. You know how diligently they made effort to go. Did they go mindlessly out there just running hoping they'd find it? Or did they make that real diligent hunt where they're looking at the same time that they're using their nose? All that stuff is really important. But if you just ignore it, because your dog robot runs out there and gets it and comes back, then you're completely missing that connection thing, which is how you ultimately be very successful or even mildly successful with this stuff. So that's all about what's in your head. So what I just talked about right here in this particular example was about 10 or 15 things just on going where there were some marks set up and running those marks. None of them had anything to do with who was watching you, who ran in front of you, who ran behind you, or what anybody thinks. Even when you're not, you're not super experienced and you're not the wise guy of the group, the one that has all the answers, even when you're not that, when you're the brand new guy, if you still, you know, for what it is that you know, just focus on this is what I would like to get out of this. Don't want to get out. Don't say, I want to go do what everybody else's dog is doing, which is generally what happens in group training sessions, right? If everyone else is doing a triple, you want to do a triple, even if that's not what your dog needs right now. Counting to three is not their problem. There's other focus-related problems. so you don't want to be governed by what everybody else, no externals. If I could get everyone that's seriously training their dog to throw out all externals, I think that you would be way, way ahead without worrying about everybody else. And of course, you're going to have the people that come up and, you know, share their wonderful knowledge with you, which may have nothing to do with what it is you're trying to get out of there. I've seen people when someone's doing this single thing. I've had it to me in the early days. I'm just running singles, and I've had somebody come, you know, with this dog, if you're planning on doing such and stuff, you really need to run some more triples. But they don't even know what it is I'm doing. I'm not working on counting to three right now. I'm working on some other stuff that's more important that will build to counting to three or whatever it is. So one of the ways to become a far more effective teacher of your dog and a far more effective reacher of the ultimate goal by taking all the necessary steps in the right order in the appropriate time is to throw out everyone giving you all the advice and working on the small details that build up to being able to run a triple really well. People are happy if their dog went out there three times, hunted around, and came up with stuff. You know, where if my dog did that, I'd be going, man, that was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that because I don't have that super focused, super marking thing on one single, much less on three of them. So this is an approach prior to your training session where you go, all right, what is it I want to get out of this particular thing right now? And what do I think I need to do to work on that? And if you're a brand new guy and there is somebody there whose judgment you trust, you can ask them, you know, what do you think about this? I'm thinking that I need to run singles and really work on the focus and the sitting still and all that. You know, and they may have a really good idea. Well, you know, I think your dog can't even get to the line under much control. I'd worry more about that right now than this other stuff. So, yes, they can be very helpful to you if they're, you know, truly people interested in your improvement, not ones that just know everything. There's a big difference. And so get advice, trusted, truly valuable advice if you're not sure the things you should be working on. But really work on the things that are both you and your dog. And when you're working your dog on anything, okay, on anything, I don't care what it is, you're doing little drills, you're force fetching, you're upland hunting, you know, you're working on poison bird blinds, I don't care what it is. Had a cat come through and try to interfere on this. When you're working on whatever aspect of things, again, it needs to be, you need to have specific aspects you're working on every day. That's important. Not just, hey, we got a training session, let's go out and whoop-de-doo, if you're serious about this stuff. I mean, I do this for a living. So every day when I do something, I have in my mind what it is that I would like to get out of this. So again, I've said that over and over. You need to have a couple things that you want to achieve, that you want to get a little bit better on, that you want to make sure your dog is taught more thoroughly or beginning to teach these things that you want. And here's the part where a lot of people don't like hearing this, but you're the teacher and the dog is a student 100% of the time. And when things go wrong, it is not that darn dog. It is not that darn dog. I'm going to take it back to teaching little kids math. If you got you're teaching a couple little kids some math stuff, and one of them just gets it, and gets bored, and so they start not paying attention, is that just being a snotty kid? Is that a terrible kid? You're going too slow, and so you're losing their ability to stay engaged, and so now they're not paying any attention to you. That is a teacher who is not teaching that kid in the way that's best for that kid. And then on the other side of it, you had another kid in there that this is hard stuff, really hard stuff. And they listen and they listen and only a little bit of it goes in. So for that one, right, you have to slow down and review a lot and then move forward and then go back and review and take the amount of time necessary for that student to grasp that the way that they can. Neither one of those is that darn kid. They are just telling you, this is how I learn, this is how I process, this is what I need to get better at this stuff. And you have to make the adjustments. Now, that doesn't mean the kid that learns really quick and gets bored easy. It might be a little bit of a, you know, pain in the neck sometimes because you got to keep up to their speed and you've got to keep them challenged. That's hard to do. Still, so when they're acting out and you want to just cream them because they're the way they are, I'm not sure that really gets you anything. So that's what I just so emphatically work on with people. It isn't the dog when stuff kind of goes screwball and stuff. Now, you know, there are days when dogs just do weird things, just like us. And to get angry, frustrated, and start punishing them is not the thing to do anymore. It is. And when you have a bad day, you were driving and you just looked the other way and didn't see the thing, ran over something, got a flat tire. You know, that's just really unfortunate. But that isn't because you're the world's worst driver, unless it happens all the time. So when you're training with your dog, assuming the dog is capable of doing the work that you're trying to get him to do, when stuff goes wrong, you have to look back at the teacher all the time. If you start blaming the students, that means you don't have to be that good of a teacher. Because when they're not learning, it's because they're just too stupid or they're just too stubborn. And nobody, would you want to be in that teacher's class? Man, if you didn't fit right in the way they wanted, then they just, you know, that's your fault. They just washed you out. So on the dog thing, I remember recently in a recent training session, there was a nice little dog that was running water blind. They went across the pond and got the blind handled pretty well. We're coming back, ran about 20 feet extra on the land and then jumped in and came straight back. And so I made the comment. I said, "Ooh, I didn't like that too much." And so one of the people that who owned the dog, their comment to me was, "Well, what should he have done when she did that? What should the handler have done when the dog coming back takes a little more land before they jump into the water? This is a dog training for the highest level, right? What should he have done?" And my answer was, "Figure out what he did that made her think she could do that to start with." So that's always one where everybody's like, "What? Wait, exactly what did you say?" That's exactly right. When the dog skirts a little bit more land and doesn't dive directly back into the water to come to you, somewhere you've done something probably that made that dog even open up to that kind of thought instead of, "Oh, got to get right back." So, I'm just going to slip a little bit. This dog loves the water too, right? They're just cheating a little bit. So people want to go after the dog right there, right? Now, if I were handling the dog and I saw two steps over, I'd have probably been on the whistle right there going, "Yeah, we don't do that." And then I would have said to myself, "What did I do that opened that kind of thinking up for that dog? What have I done in the past?" It could be just how I get her out of the vehicle. It could be, you just don't know. Nobody could give you that answer. Maybe I was just too, you know, casual about stuff some other place. And so casual thinking started to come in and she's coming back going, "Well, let me just get a little more land." But whatever it is, it's something I missed. And it really is. Now, some people respond really well to being told that and are very willing to take on the responsibility. And others are not. It's like, no, I've paid a lot of money. That silly dog better just get back in the water. Well, that's nice, but that doesn't work because dogs are, again, they reflect their training and their trainer. So when dogs mess up or when dogs just show you something, hopefully you notice it, just like that little thing where she just skirted a little bit, you know what the next time is probably going to be? A little bit more. Maybe she'll take a little more land before she gets into the water. There could be a lot of ways where that could slowly start to become a dog that's starting to not make just dive into the water and dive back into the water the way she's taught. So if you pay attention, remember to the small details of what you're doing. Like, I'm just running a water blind right now. So for that, I mean, she needs to go at the water when I point her. And she needs to, you know, take my cast the best of her ability. And when she gets out the other side and then comes back in, she's got to make her best effort to get back into the water. And then she needs to come straight back and not take any shortcuts. You know, needs to stop on the whistle if I hand, all that kind of stuff. Before you run that, you get that stuff in your head. So that when something pops up, like, "I'm going to take a few extra feet over here on the land," you're not sitting there flat-footed with that. And then if the dog does try that, ask yourself what you did that opened up that kind of thinking. If you can go at dog training that way, then you can make good progress. You can prevent a problem from initiating and growing and become larger. And then all of a sudden it's a really big problem and somebody goes, "Hey, you better do something about that." You know, by then, after you've allowed the dog to do a bunch of not good stuff for a while, you just gave them carte blanche to do that. Now all of a sudden you change the rules. Okay, so that can be problematic, and it's also not fair because you just change the rules and start getting after them for stuff. You know, it's like, "What happened, dude? It was okay before." So the things that I'm talking about right here, right now, are simple things, but what makes them difficult is it requires thinking ahead of time, kind of knowing yourself, and refining things down to a very simple level. All right, so it's easy for me. I do it for a living, right? If I don't, if I mess this stuff up, then no one's ever going to send me a dog. So you have, it becomes habit. It becomes out of necessity, right? Okay, this needs to work as well as it possibly can. So let me get everything real clear in my head. What is it I'm trying to get? I'm not going to try and get 18 things done. I'm going to try to get two or three and get those really well before I add four and five to that. And I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't care what anyone else says, unless it's somebody who I genuinely respect. And most people I respect aren't going to fling their ideas all over on me. They're going to wait for me to ask. Because, you know, if I'm not ready for it, they're not going to say something. So get that kind of clarity and then do simple things. And you're going to always be better off doing more simplified work than you are on, let's do a triple today. We haven't done one in a long time. And, you know, maybe that's just the right thing if you've done all the preliminary work. But if you haven't, if everybody else in the training group is doing it, don't do it. Just figure out what you want. And while you're working your dog, this is the other part of this, and have a kind of have an idea and a plan. What do I want to get out of this? What do I need? If you don't know what you want to get or what you need, get some help from someone who does know a little bit more to give, because you got to have an idea when you're going out. What am I going to look for? What am I going to work on? What are my expectations? What do I do when things don't have a plan? What happens if the dog tries to get out early? You know, what do I do if the dog doesn't just slips a whistle and isn't sitting? Have an idea what you want to do about all that and work on those simple things. That takes your full concentration. So to do that, you have to be aware of your own mindset and what you're thinking, and you have to be aware of your dog. You cannot go run a dog on something if you don't know if they're looking, paying attention, involved in the same planet as you right there. So you have to get this straight in your head, and then you go with that dog. So if you're going to go run a set of marks, watch your dog. You got to, yes, you have to watch where the bird goes down. Watch your dog. Did they see it? Are they looking? Are they staying on it? What are they telling me about this? Are they kind of lackadaisical about it? Are they super intense? Do I have all of what they have to give me? So you need to be aware of that with your dog as well. If you're trying to triple on a dog and you don't know whether it's even looking or what's happening here, that's going to be quite the cluster of activity there. So it's far easier for you and the dog if you can break it down to very simple principles. Practice and do it so consistently that it becomes the way you approach this all the time. No downsides to this. Takes a lot of mental energy, and you have to really care about it. And then whatever happens as you do one of these workouts, one of these training sessions, whatever happens, instead of trying to find ways to correct the dog, which is where people are most comfortable, let's correct the dog. I am emphatic about, no, let's correct the trainer and find out what the trainer did to allow the dog to think that way. And let's take the one example I gave you. The little dog ran, just took a little bit of land, not much, nobody else hardly noticed, a little bit of land before she jumped into the water coming back on a water blind. And of course, one of the owners said, well, what should he have done right there? Well, I said, one, whistle sooner, catch that within two steps when they're doing something like that. And then the other thing is, you know, find out, where did I get this dog to relax so much? And, you know, I can't sit there and tell them what it was. Maybe it was the prior, maybe they did it on the marks and let it fly. Maybe, you know, it was getting them out of the vehicle to relax. You've got to find out where you did that and then remove that from what you do. If it was getting out of the vehicle and running around and peeing and sniffing and not coming when called and they just kind of get real relaxed, don't do that again. You know, instead, get maybe some strict obedience all the way, airing it over to the holding blind, up to the line. Or remember back on the set of marks that you've done the last several days. Did she just slip a little bit here and slip a little, just a couple times, tiny, just a little bit? Did she look over to the land before jumping in the water? Were there some signs where she just gave me a little idea that she was going to do that and I didn't pick up on them? So I mean, you got to like be good at this stuff. You got to think about this stuff. You have to be paying attention. If you're one of those people that runs a dog and they go across and get the bird and you turn around and start talking to the people standing behind you, you're going to miss all kinds of stuff that if you didn't miss it, might save a few things in the front. Plus, you're also teaching your dog, hey, there's times to add, do whatever you want. I'm not even paying attention. Not good when you are training somebody. Not good if you're teaching those students in a math class. You know, sometimes listen to me and other times I just babble on about nothing. It's just, that's really not a good lesson to put across to students. And so finally, I've been talking about a training group type session. Let's talk about you training all by yourself. So it's much easier. Well, I don't know if it is or not. When you're all by yourself, there aren't really externals. There's nobody that's going to, you know, do the work better, do the blinds you're running better. There's nobody there, so it's not going to be a competition. So we can kind of push the ego aside. Again, when you're going out by yourself, say, all right, we're going to go. I got, you know, 4 cold blinds set up out here, and we're going to practice running blinds. How'd you set them up? Okay, so if whatever it is, whatever you do, you could be doing drills, you could be doing casting, you know, any kind of thing. I'm just going to use blinds for a good example. So did you just walk out there and put up 4 little markers and throw out 4 bumpers and come back? Or did you say, all right, what's the wind direction, right? I'm not giving lectures on how to set up blinds, but what's the wind direction? What's the terrain? Is it throwing them somewhere? What's going to be the easiest and what's going to be the hardest? Obviously, downwind is easiest, and the more crosswind you have, the more difficult it is. They don't take casts the same way. So, you know, maybe your dog is just having a hard time with left casts. It's, you know, some do, some don't. It's just something. They have a just really hard time with left casts. So if you get a little bit of a crosswind, set it up so that most of the dogs tend to fade with the wind, so your casts are going to have to be left casts into the wind. All right, so most of your casts are probably going to be left. So here's a really good place. All right, the first blind is going to be downwind, and then the next one is going to be a little crosswind, and then the next one a little more, and the next one, you know, a pretty strong crosswind. And start with the easy one first. So now I've got these blinds. They're not going to be difficult by terms of being too long. I don't have a lot of stuff that they got to get them through into this piece of water, into this cover. Don't put a bunch of complication to the blinds, because let's say today you're working by yourself, your dog's been really having trouble taking left casts when you're doing stuff. So let's make it where I'm going to have to give left casts and I'm going to work on that. And so, you know, you don't let them, if you give a left cast and they go right, indirect pressure on sit, you know, it's walk out there and just take the time to work out that this dog has got to cast into the wind a left direction. And it's not by getting mad or frustrated. It's just by being completely relentless and just staying at it. And finally, the dog is just going to give in because you just won't stop. You're not giving in, and they will begin. They might not be fantastic, but they're turning to the left and moving a little bit to the left. So you got something out of these 4 blinds. You don't want to have difficulty, distance, terrain throwing them one way, obstacles, and also this left cast thing. Break it down, you're working by yourself, into something that you and your dog need. Think about setting it up that way. And go work on that particular thing. If that goes well, the next time, you know, work on obstacles, work on difficulty, work on distance, whatever it is that you feel like you need. But have that thing in your mind, set it up mindfully, and then everything you do is working towards that end of getting this dog to take the casts that you need to cast when it's, for some reason, very difficult for them. No anger, no pressure, no giant punishment, indirect pressure on sit, you know, to get them to take the correct cast. That's a whole nother deal. But work on that. And just remain focused on that all the way through. And then when you're done, hopefully it ended kind of on an upbeat thing. And then, you know, if the dog's kind of boat rocked a little bit, throw a couple happy bumpers. If they're not, don't. You know, when you guys are done and you made a little bit of progress and you worked really hard on one aspect, which is going to be good for you and your dog. And when you go after imperfections in your training and little problem areas that way, you and that dog fix them by connecting. You're not fixing them by showing them who's boss or by getting after them in front of everybody or by doing whatever it is you do. You're fixing it by connection and engagement with this dog and just relentlessly going after without blowing up and losing a lot of anger and electricity and stuff, but by connection you get through it. That is, oh my gosh, you know, any of you listening to this that have done that, you know what I'm talking about. That just makes all future problems far less, and you develop a means to get out of them, and you're just completely focused on just a few small things, and you plan ahead, and you go in there, and you take full responsibility for what the dog is doing. Full responsibility. This dog isn't taking left casts. Maybe he just doesn't like turning that way, but I've let this develop. And so I'm going to take the time to go out there and work on this particular thing. And there's 10 million problems like that. Upland problems, you know, casting and lining problems, running marks. You know, if your dog isn't marking very well, there's a lot of things you can do to get a dog to mark better. You really can. But you just work on that single thing and really nothing else. And you stay invested in the dog and through your connection. You guys work through these things. There's a dog that's going to do, you know, unless he's just some rogue kind of outlaw dog, is going to do their best to do the work for you because you have done your best to do the work for them. And, you know, that sounds kind of like a little meme you'd see somewhere, but I cannot tell you how true that is. If you sit there and go, "La, little dog, you and I are going to get this. And I am going to work as hard as I'm asking you to work to break through and understand this thing I'm trying to teach." And when you do that, invest that way, the dog, you get the reward on that level. But if you want to go out there and just knock them upside the head and go, "Hey, man, it's my way or the highway," that's basically what you're going to get back. So, summing up, been 37 minutes, long time on this one. Have things clear in your mind before you ever do this. Get some advice and help if there's areas of which you're unaware or things that you just don't know. But then focus on those things and work on those, just a few simple things, as perfectly as you possibly can. Stay aware the whole time. When things don't go right, put the onus on you for having either not taught well enough, communicated well enough, or just spent enough time working on it. And put as much work and effort into this as you would like your dog to do for you. And throw the externals and the other people and the keeping up with the Joneses type stuff out of this. And you will pass everybody up with this. I guarantee that. Just make sure your dog is capable of doing the things that you're trying to teach him. So I hope that gives some people a little bit of food for thought. It's not easy. Staying focused and paying a lot of attention is hard. But if you can't, your dog can't. So basically whatever you want from him, you got to give him or her. I hope that helps. And I will be back soon, I hope, with the third installment on this. Have a good one, everybody.